This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bad pass now for Alex Tuck. Off his skates, he had to slow off. Now Perreault will try to poke it by. Perreault's got a partial break. He walks in, let a backhander go. He scores! Matthew Perreault stole the puck off Derek Englund. Walked in, cutting toward the middle. Went to the backhand, shelved it on Fleury. And Winnipeg leads it 2-0.
That proved to be the game-winning goal last night as the Winnipeg Jets defeated the Vegas Golden Knights by a 4-1 margin. It was a night where the breakaways went to the Jets' advantage. They opened the scoring with Kyle Connor getting his 17th of the year on a shorthanded breakaway. Matthew Perreault, as you just heard, made it 2-0, the call courtesy of our good friend Paulie Edmonds, and the Jets go on to a 4-1 victory, adding two goals into the empty net for good measure. Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good evening, universe, and welcome to a late night edition of NHL This Week. We hope you enjoyed the coverage of the Manitoba Moose. They were victorious tonight over the Milwaukee Admirals by a 4-2 margin. The Moose continue their hot streak on home ice, and that hot streak, of course, matched by the NHL parent club, the Winnipeg Jets, as they defeated, as I mentioned, the Golden Knights last night. They had defeated the Anaheim Ducks on Sunday, and they defeated the Detroit Red Wings on Friday, so it was a good three-game homestand for the Winnipeg Jets before they go out on the road for the next two to wrap up their pre-player break portion of the NHL schedule. Pardon me, I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and
Sean Assar. Was that a hiccup or was that a burp?
That was actually a cough. I was just sort of choking on my own words there a little bit, but I'm okay now. So why don't you say hello to the nice people,
yeah,
Ezra?
As long as you're okay.
I am okay.
Almost like, Drew, that was a hiccup that turned into a yawn or something.
It was a cough that I tried to suppress, and suppressing a cough is never a great idea. I'm just thankful I didn't blow out my eyeballs or something in that instance. So anyways, Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Assar, good evening to you both, gentlemen. Nice to see you late night here on this Wednesday evening.
Yeah, great to be back on air, guys. I'm just glad that you didn't puke. And I'm just glad that Shawnee is back from Florida safe and sound.
Yes, Sean, nice trip. Nice little time away.
Oh, yeah. Great time. Sunshine, palm trees, daiquiris, boys. It was a good time.
There you go. And you can tell us all about your adventures at Harry Potter Land or whatever
it's called. Many to recall.
Okay. Well, I mean, you were posting on Instagram you had a 14-inch wand, according to Harry Potterville. I don't know what that means, but I salute you for that accomplishment.
The wand chooses the wizard. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. I still don't know what that means, but in any event, I'm not a Harry Potter guy, so somebody else can fill me in on that.
Well, you have played Quidditch before, though.
I just rode around on a broomstick in my backyard, but that was just a separate issue altogether. There was no real reason for that. So I kept trying to fly, but it didn't work.
Yeah, it's a cool place, Harry Potter Land. I'm a big fan. Yeah, I have been of the stories and the books and the movies. Yeah, kind of. More so the books, and it was just like being a kid in a candy store and basically just me and the children running around.
A lot
of parents were telling me to rein it back so their kids can participate in
they
things.
They actually had you on a leash.
They had no idea what they were talking about.
Yeah,
one can hold me back.
I showed your pictures to my wife, and she's a big Harry Potter fan, and she's like, okay, we have to go there immediately. I'm like, okay, let's go. I don't really know what it is.
Get the butter beer. It's delicious.
Yeah, is it real beer?
No, but you can get the alcoholic version now.
Now we're talking.
Yeah.
And now I think you've piqued Ezzy and I's interest with the actual alcohol.
What about former NHLer Corey Potter?
What about pottery? Nothing.
Remember Corey Potter?
Vaguely, but not really enough to really want to talk about him.
Played for the Oilers, the Predators, Flames.
Yeah, I mean,
also magical.
Can we talk about the Jets last night?
Yes.
Okay.
Let's talk about the Jets.
4-1 victors.
Let's just dedicate this whole segment to Laurent Brossoit, who sets a franchise record with 26 saves in the second period. You know, a gutsy win by the Jets. And I know a lot of the talk, boys, was about, you know, revenge from the Western Conference final, losing in five games. But as far as I was concerned, it was just finishing off this homestand the right way and beating a team that you know you're very likely going to have to go through to get to the Stanley Cup final. And yeah, sure, the Calgary Flames and the San Jose Sharks are also good teams in the Pacific Division. But when you look at that Golden Knights team, and we were sitting up in the press box yesterday, Drew, and you know, I said this to you because I know that you're high on the Golden Knights, and you know they didn't get off to the best start, but you look at this Golden Knights team, and it's essentially the same team as last year. Nate Schmidt's back in the lineup after that 20-game suspension, and they're healthy.
For not taking PEDs.
Well, and Paul Stastny is back in the lineup, and people forget he missed the first 30 games of the season. And, you know, you throw in Stastny and Pacioretty, who essentially replace David Perron and James Neal, right, because those two were on the second line last year. But it's essentially the same team, and, you know, Brandon Peary got the big goal yesterday, even though he coughed up the puck on the first goal. But, you know, Peary has been a great addition to that team. He's been a guy who spent the majority of the season in the American Hockey League, Shawnee. But you look at this Golden Knights team, and Lauren Brossoit stole it last night, boys. And, you know, you got to give a lot of credit to Kyle Connor, who had a great game, scored the big goal to open it up, and Matty Perreault, who got the big goal there on the turnover. But, I mean, this Golden Knights team probably should have had a couple of goals, at least more in this game, because they peppered Lauren Brossoit. And sure, they hit the post a couple times. Marchessault hit the post in the first period. I forget who hit the post. It was a deflection off of the Derek Englund shot. So they hit a couple posts. They didn't get the puck luck, but I mean, that's what happens sometimes. It happened last year with Marc-Andre Fleury. Like, the Jets probably would have won that series if Marc-Andre Fleury was human. I mean, he was the difference in that series, and Lauren Brossoit was the difference last night.
You really can't say enough about how impressive he's been, obviously, last night and all season long for the Winnipeg Jets, and where the Jets would be if they hadn't received the quality goaltending, quality backup goaltending, and the backup role that he's provided for the team. Last night, he was tremendous. He was unflappable. I mean, in the face of six power play opportunities, I mean, there was that stretch there in the second period where, like you said, he faced 26 shots in the second period. He turned them all away. And, I mean, there was a 5-on-3 opportunity for about 50 seconds there. The Golden Knights, if they had any success on the power play last night, it's probably a completely different game. They have to be thinking to themselves, our power play is what did us in. Not only did they not score in any of their six power play opportunities, Sean, but they even gave up a shorthanded goal to really sort of pour some salt into the wounds.
And to make it a little extra salty, you talk about that second period, and the Jets emerged up 2-0 out of that period. So Jets taking advantage of their scoring opportunities. I mean, both those goals. I mean, we heard Paulie Edmonds call. I mean, those are beautiful, skillful plays. I mean, we saw the speed to burn of Kyle Connor, who starts the play. You're talking about the turnover, and then busts up the ice, knocks the puck out of there. Unbelievable. And then Matty Perreault, the tenacious forecheck, turnover. Marc-Andre Fleury is a very, very, very experienced netminder. His guy has seen a lot of players shoot on him. He got burned twice on a poke check. He got he missed two poke checks in a row. That doesn't happen very often.
Well, you know, once you go for the poke check, it's really the definition from a goaltender's perspective, high risk, high reward.
Yeah.
Once you lose on the poke check, once you don't succeed on the poke check, well, you have no chance.
Well, it's high risk reward, but it's also so dependent on timing, right?
Sure.
I mean, your timing has to be perfect. It's almost like the way I would maybe... the analogy I would use for a poke check is almost when you're trying to pick a base stealer off in baseball, right? The catcher really has to time it perfectly.
Or jumping a route in football, maybe.
Right.
You know, you have that one opportunity.
Something we don't see a lot, boys.
The poke check?
You don't see the poke check very often.
He's really one of the... I mean, it's an old-school play.
Yep.
From a goaltender's perspective, like the double stack, double pad stack, you don't see it very often. Twice he went for it. Twice he failed. Twice the Jets scored. I mean, it's a little simple, but, you know, the Jets were opportunistic. Certainly were outplayed for maybe the first period was probably relatively even, I would suggest. The second period was obviously tremendously one-sided. But to come out of a tremendously one-sided second period with the two-goal lead, it just proves they were opportunistic even in the face of very few opportunities.
Yeah, guys, and we talked about, you know, Matty Perreault, who continues to have the hot hand, right? But, and, you know, we've talked about Adam Lowry, Brandon Tanev a lot this year, but to me, that was the Jets' best line. And, you know, you talk about the penalty kill, you know, the Vegas Golden Knights. I said this to you again, Drew, up in the press box, and I know the Golden Knights have struggled as of late, especially on the road with their power play, but the Jets just didn't seem to give them any time and space. And Lowry and Tanev, along with Scheifele and Wheeler, but specifically Lowry and Tanev, to me, stood out there. You know, they were right around 5 to 6 minutes of shorthanded time. Lowry, again, was great in the faceoff circle, above 60%. I mean, he had a fantastic game.
He won one or two faceoffs when the Jets were shorthanded on that 5-on-3. and they were able to gain control off the faceoff and, you know, clear the puck down the end of the ice to the other end, which, you know, there's 10 seconds off the power play immediately. Winning those faceoffs was huge for the Winnipeg Jets and for Adam Lowry.
Yeah, his ability and not only his ability, but the confidence that the team has and Coach Maurice has now in him to send out Adam Lowry and to essentially, I don't want to say use the word guarantee, but it's a pretty high probability that he's going to win a faceoff. I went back, just, you know, I was doing some research for the show and went back and watched the Anaheim overtime, watched a bit of that game, and Paul Maurice would send out Adam Lowry to win a faceoff, and then he would take him off right away.
Sure.
He put on it Brandon Tanev, which I found amazingly hilarious.
You get the speed,
you get the speed factor, yeah, which is great. But
when
it happened a couple times.
Three in overtime, you might as well reward a guy who's you know, played well for you. It doesn't bother
me. And
he
was riding a five-game goal-scoring streak at the time, so he was playing well, confidently. But just the ability to have that in your back pocket is so invaluable, especially, like you said, if you're in the postseason, you got to win an important faceoff down five on three.
And, Shawnee, Vegas got their chances, but it's almost like the Jets beat the Golden Knights at their own game, right? Because if you think of Pierre-Edward Bellemare and William Carrier and Thomas Nosek, these types of players, what are they good at? They're tenacious forecheckers. They've got speed. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what Tanev, Perreault, and Lowry do, right?
Yeah.
And, again, you know, a lot of people still think Adam Lowry is best suited as a fourth-line center, and I wouldn't necessarily argue with that, ideally, but when you look at the Jets, they're first place in the Central Division. They've got a game in hand. He's their third line center. He's going up against the other team's top competition, and he's doing a pretty good job. So as it stands right now, I think, you know, you keep him as your third line center, whatever you want to call it, 3A, 3B. And, you know, Lowry, as opposed to maybe, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, he's been one of their most consistent players. Sure, he's never going to be a 25 or 30 goal scorer, but, I mean, you know you're going to get some offense enough from him, and you know that he's going to do his job well, whether it's in the faceoff circle or on the penalty kill. And yesterday, I thought that line really stood out.
Oh, to your point there about that line, the Tanev, Lowry, Perreault line, they led the Jets in Corsi 4 percentage last night. Tanev 65%, Adam Lowry 61.9%, and Matthew Perreault 63.16% Corsi 4. Everybody else on the Jets was well below that mark. I think the next highest was in and around 53%. I don't have it off my fingertips, but they controlled the play like they do most games where they play their opposition. The puck is often in the offensive zone when that line is out there, which is just a nice, it's such a huge asset for Paul Maurice to be able to call upon and know that if it's a defensive zone draw, you're going to get the pressure out of your own zone likely, and if it's an offensive zone draw, you're going to keep the puck away from your own goalie.
Yeah, and nothing is more invaluable than when you have a lead in a game and you're trying to burn minutes off the clock and you can send out a line that will win you a faceoff in the offensive zone and then keep the puck in it for, let's say, a minute 10, you know, hypothetically. They are tremendous at the cycle game. We've seen this ever since pretty much the inception of that line. Regardless, you put Matthew Perreault in there, he's so strong on the walls as well. I mean, he fits in perfectly on that line, and I mean, it's a great tool to have in the back pocket.
It certainly is. The Jets, of course, winning their third straight on home ice. They head to Nashville to face their chief rivals in the Central Division. That'll be an exciting contest tomorrow night. When we come back, we talk more about the Jets and the Predators. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Now looking ahead, it's Ekholm. He finds Arvidsson. Arvidsson scores! Big start. Nashville Predator. Victor Arvidsson does it again.
Judging the numbers earlier. Johansson to the point. Subban lets it go.
Tip, they score! Arvidsson did it again! His second of the game!
Here come the Caps. Stripped to the puck. Arvidsson got it loose. Here comes Arvidsson. Short-handed on the breakaway. He scores! It's hat-trick time!
That's our good friend Willie Donick on the call, the Nashville Predators play-by-play man. It was National Hat Day yesterday, so it's only fitting that there was a hat trick. It came off the stick of Victor Arvidsson of the Nashville Predators leading the Preds to a 7-2 home ice victory over the defending Stanley Cup champion Washington Capitals. Welcome back to NHL This Week. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Sean Asor. Chris Curry is the producer extraordinaire of this program. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. The Jets and the Predators tomorrow evening from Music City, a battle of the top two teams in the Central Division, the top two teams both statistically, and the top two teams in the on the on-paper test, certainly, as they are the clear upper echelon in the Central Division. It'll be a good contest. Ultimately, I don't know if it's an overwhelmingly meaningful contest. Obviously, the Jets would want to win, but I think these two teams know that any trip to the Stanley Cup is going to go through one another, and it really doesn't get ramped up until maybe March when they play each other a couple times in March, and of course when the playoffs begin with a likely second-round meeting between these two teams.
Yeah, like you said, Drew, the Jets and Predators have only played once, mm-hmm. and that was way back in October, and we all remember what happened there with the Jets taking eight straight minor penalties, and,
yeah.
and I agree with you. I mean, regardless of what happens, if the Jets win, if the Preds win, if it's regulation, overtime, shootout, I mean, these two teams are going to be at the top of the Central Division. Maybe Colorado has something to say about that.
They lost again tonight, I should point out. The Avs losing to Ottawa tonight. They're 2-6-2 in their last 10. Their struggles continue.
So most likely it's going to be the Jets and the Preds. And, you know, I look at these two teams, and I don't think there would be a better second-round matchup than these two teams, because it was certainly the best second-round, not just the second-round matchup, I should say it was the best series of last year's playoffs. And, you know, you mentioned the Preds are 6-2-2 in their last 10, you know, picked up a big win yesterday, winning 7-4. And, you know, Victor Arvidsson, you know, he has 9 goals in his last 11 games since he returned from injury. And, you know, I don't know if you guys follow Adam Vingan on Twitter, but Adam Vingan, good friend of the show.
Predators beat writer for the Tennessean.
Great yep. follow if you don't follow
he's
him.
He's actually with the Athletic now, but
pardon me.
Honest mistake. That's an honest mistake. He was with the Tennessean,
yeah.
and we've got Josh Cooper coming on later, who's now with the Athletic. He used to cover the Preds for the Tennessean, of course, good friend of the show as well, but Adam Vingan has been going off, boys, on Victor Arvidsson, and he just posted his stats here on Twitter. If you look at players at 5-on-5, per 60 minutes that have played at least 300 minutes, you look at Victor Arvidsson, and this is per game, 2.31 goals per game. That's first. 3.55 points per game. That's third. 11.71 shots per game. That's incredible. Fourth in the NHL. Shot attempts, fourth. That's not shots per game. 11.71, I'm not sure what that is. But the point is, when you look at scoring chances and shot attempts and shots, top five in the NHL in all categories. So Victor Arvidsson, we played the audio clip coming out of the break. I mean, this guy, I think, needs to be talked about as the most valuable player on the Predators.
Well, just to add to that, Vingan also went on to write that Victor Arvidsson is the Predators' most irreplaceable player on their roster and made a statement for that in his article in The Athletic. And, yeah, you want to talk about just how impressive this guy has been. Just any time you watch the Nashville Predators, you're like, who is that little guy? He's amazing, and he's just so skilled. And, I mean, yeah.
It's high praise, and I mean, I think what Adam's point in this all is that if you had to list off the most indispensable players on the Nashville Predators, and as a Jets fan, you sort of keep a closer eye on the Predators, given mm-hmm. the rivalry, or somebody who observes the Jets, you keep a closer eye on the Predators. Victor Arvidsson would probably not be the name that first comes
exactly.
to mind. You think more Philip Forsberg, Ryan Johansson, PK Subban.
Pekka Rinne.
I think of their top four yeah. defensemen.
Roman Josi.
Yeah.
Matias Ekholm.
Ryan Ellis. I mean, you're right, and that's why this team is so dangerous. And you could do the same exercise with the Jets guys. I mean, pick your poison. Is it Mark Scheifele? Is it Blake Wheeler? Is it Josh Morrissey?
Yeah, but those guys are the... I don't think there's anybody on the Jets who's as unsung of a hero as Victor Arvidsson might be on the Predators.
What about Kyle Connor?
Well, I mean,
I've been talking about Kyle Connor all season long, and you know, he was arguably, you know, one of the the top five rookies in the NHL last year, but this year I feel like he's still not getting enough attention.
You know, he was terrific for the Jets last night, obviously getting the first goal, and he was noticeable, and he was playing some quality minutes shorthanded as well, which we hadn't normally seen. Before this recent three-game homestand, he had been in a bit of a slump. He had been struggling a little bit, so maybe people were sort of out of sight, out of mind after he got bumped off of the line with Scheifele and Wheeler, and the swap was made to put Ehlers up there and Connor down with Little and with Laine for a while there. Connor went through a little bit of a slump, but he's certainly an indispensable member of the Jets and a core member of the Jets going forward, but I don't think he's the key member. I don't think anybody's ever looking at the Jets and saying Kyle Connor is the key member of the team, whereas that's what they're saying about Victor Arvidsson. And if a guy like Adam Vingan is saying it, who Adam watches this team closer than anybody else, you know that there's some truth to power that he's speaking in this instance.
It's impressive. Listen, Jets fans don't need any explanation what Victor Arvidsson can do. We've seen his skill on display many times, and we'll be seeing it many more times. But yeah, to name him as your most irreplaceable player, that is high praise from a guy that really knows the Nashville Predators.
Yeah. Anyway, so the Jets, of course, into Nashville tomorrow night to play the Predators, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. And then they wrap it up in Dallas on Saturday night. Hellebuck for the next two?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, when we were looking at these games coming up on Saturday, last Saturday's show, we talked about, you know, Brossoit probably getting one of the starts, not two of the starts. Mm-hmm. And now it looks like there is a chance that Brossoit gets one of these two starts. If I was a betting man, Drew, I would probably say that Hellebuck gets both of these starts.
I would agree. I would agree.
But that's simply based on, I think, the timing with the player break coming up and the All-Star break. I don't see the need to necessarily get Brossoit in right before the player break. I mean, I think Brossoit getting the start yesterday, guys, was a surprise to many, mm-hmm. and it turned out that it was the right decision by Paul Maurice. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Hellebuck played really well against Nashville in the playoffs last year, so that's obviously part of the reason why he's going to get the start tomorrow night. But, you know, when you talk about, you know, that game against the Dallas Stars, there isn't a lot at stake there, so I don't know why you would overthink this and start Brossoit instead of Hellebuck.
And just conversely, on the other side of the ice, it'll be interesting. Is it Rene again coming off the shutout against the Jets on October 11th, a 3-0 win? Or perhaps do they go to UC Saros, who's also putting up crazy backup numbers? So it's really interesting. Two teams with not only the 1-2 reigning Vezina candidate and winner from last year, but two backup goaltenders that are playing unbelievably well for their clubs as well.
To your point about UC Saros, Sean, in his last six appearances for the Nashville Predators, how does a goals against average of .95 sound and a save percentage of .966?
Sounds magical.
It sounds pretty good. I would suggest that, you know, if you're a fan of the Nashville Predators, you know, there's no right or wrong answer, I suppose. I mean, I think that, you know, if you're Paul Maurice, you're saying, look, we got the game for Laurent Brossoit after he had played well in his previous start. You know, Connor Hellebuck wasn't great against Anaheim, but you don't want – what you're doing more than anything is you're praising Brossoit while also pouring cold water on any possible hint of a goaltending controversy, and I don't think there is any possible hint of a goaltending controversy. Has Brossoit been better than Hellebuck? In his 10 or 11 starts, he's been very good. Is Connor Hellebuck
is still the Jets' number one goaltender.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
we talked about it as well on last Saturday's show.
Yeah.
I mean, we expect Laurent Brossoit in the last, you know, 15 to 20 games to get more starts than mm-hmm. he was getting in the first 40 to 45 games. But that doesn't change who the number one goalie is.
Well, you know, it was interesting. Hellebuck, you know, again, he was sort of talking to the media today, and he definitely has, you know, anytime he sort of meets with the media, he's got a bit of a chip on his shoulder in some of his comments, and he's talking about, you know, they're asking about his performance, and he's saying, you know, aren't we in first place? You know, he's talking about, you know, himself. You know, he's saying, you know, my game's not perfect yet. It was interesting. He said, my game's not perfect, but my game will be perfect when the playoffs roll around.
He let in a bad goal against the Ducks.
Yeah.
The fact that people are jumping on Connor Hellebuck for a bad goal, I mean, goalies let in bad goals. This is a guy who was a runner-up for the Vezina Trophy last year. He's still having a good year. Is Laurent Brossoit having a better year than him statistically? Of course he is. He's also played way less games.
Yeah.
And he's played lesser competition. Now, again, I'm not taking anything away from Brossoit mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. he has probably been, I would argue he's been maybe the Jets' best story this year. It's been really incredible when you consider that he's won 10 games already for the Jets, and he's got the shutout, and he's got the great save percentage, but Hellebuck is still the number one goaltender. He's going to get the majority of the starts, but if you're going to start piling on a guy because he lets in one bad goal...
Well, I mean, I think it's more...
It's pretty ridiculous. It was a bad goal, don't get me wrong, but to start saying that he's not a good goaltender and he's having a bad season and he's lost his confidence...
I'll tell you what, one thing he hasn't lost, it's his confidence. I mean, there's certainly nobody almost in his post-game comments or in his post-practice comments that is as confident and self-assured as Connor Hellebuck.
I don't read any... I guess you don't read comments because you hear them. Mm-hmm. I guess if you didn't hear them, you read
them.
He's
always been self-assured.
You know what?
That's part of his mental makeup is that he...
But I wouldn't use that as
a negative.
I wouldn't use it as a negative or positive.
Well, I mean,
these interviews that are done with players, I mean, they don't mean anything.
Well, I think that's how he's wired. He's wired to always look at the, even if the glass is only the tiniest bit full, I think he looks at that tiny bit.
No, he's a positive guy, but yeah.
He likes to boost himself up at every opportunity. He would never hear him
say... I think most players at this level, Drew, are confident.
Well, but you would never hear him say, like you hear Patrick Laine say, that hockey is hard for me right now. You wouldn't hear those words come from Connor Hellebuck. That's just, you know, the way he approaches the, you know, the business side of the game, I would suggest. When we come back, more on the Nashville Predators, we're going to be joined by Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio in Nashville. That's coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Sean Assar, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can reach us here in studio via Twitter at Illegal Curve and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From Penalty Box Radio in Nashville, Tennessee, we're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Justin Bradford. Justin, good evening. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Connection here. I guess the Moose beat up on the Admirals. So great thing to have the AHL teams meeting up right before the big night.
Absolutely. That's right. The Moose with a 4-2 victory over the Admirals tonight here in Winnipeg. And then the parent clubs will do battle tomorrow evening in Nashville, the Jets and the Predators, of course. And Justin, sort of when we were talking about the game tomorrow night in our previous segment, we were saying, yeah, it's the top two teams in the Central Division. And yeah, theoretically, it could be a big rivalry game. But I'm not getting that sense at this point in the season. It's, you know, middle of January. You look at the standings in the Central Division and, you know, barring something tremendously unforeseen, these are going to be the top two teams in the Central Division. And I don't get the impression that these games are going to really take on the intensity that we would expect until they meet again later on in March when I think they play each other twice in the span of a couple weeks.
Yeah, I think it's really going to depend on how the first few minutes are going. Obviously, this is a game the Predators have been looking forward to because they even mentioned it last night in their post-game comments. This is one of those games that they had to get through Washington, and now Winnipeg coming up. It's a big test of a week for them, especially after coming back from a six-game road trip, their longest of the season, which was bookended by a loss to Detroit in overtime and then a thumping from the Carolina Hurricanes, even though they beat Toronto in that road trip. The fans weren't too happy with the bookends of that trip, and then they come out and put a big beating on Washington, Washington being the second game of a back-to-back. So it's the kind of week to where the Predators, they're looking at this as another litmus test as they're continuing to get more and more healthy. Yannick Weber just came back, and as everybody knows, I mean, Victor Arvidsson was missing for a lot of games, and so was DK Subban and Philip Forsberg. So everyone's kind of looking now as how do the Predators really stack up against the other best teams in the NHL and especially in the Central Division. So I think the Predators may get a little up for this one, a little bit more than maybe normal. And it's going to be interesting to see just because these games are so spaced out. I mean, the last time was October. And then again, the last two are going to be in March up there in Winnipeg. So it's going to be interesting for what the potential second round matchup could be again between these two teams.
You know, Justin, you just mentioned Victor Arvidsson, and, you know, we have to talk more about him. He picks up a hat trick on National Hat Day, which is just awesome. And I know that you've seen Adam Vingan just completely going off on Victor Arvidsson yesterday and today on Victor Arvidsson. And you mentioned that he's been really good for the Predators since he returned from injury. 9 goals in 11 games since he returned. What else can you say about Arvidsson aside from he's so valuable to this Predators team?
he's what so many people say, he's the heartbeat of the club. And it seems like this team feeds off of his energy. And it may seem silly, but the team plays different when he's in the lineup. And it's just because of the way that he leads by example. He's the Energizer Bunny. It's funny to see sometimes because he'll go out there skating hard and hard and hard. And when he gets back to the bench, he is huffing and puffing. So you know that he has expended all of his energy that he had in that one shift. And the players feed off of that. They see what he's doing. They see that he's making good defensive plays and that he's also able to just get sprung for a breakaway while shorthanded. And it was the first, I believe, breakaway shorthanded hat trick Frosty goal because Predators fans get free Frosties from Wendy's when the Predators score four. So it was the diabetes hat trick. And it was one of those things that his energy out there and the way he's able to spring loose, they feed off of that. And so he's a small frame, and Rocco Grimaldi as well, another small guy, had a spinorama backhand goal last night. It seems like the smaller players are kind of showing off right now for the Predators, but especially Victor Arvidsson, his work ethic, that the team feeds off of what he's able to do, and that you could tell they really missed that when he was gone. And so having him back has been a great spark to that offense, especially, I mean, Forsberg and Arvidsson being gone, those are two 30-goal scorers that are missing from this club that doesn't really have that much scoring overall when you look at it. They don't have as many weapons depth-wise. So when you had those two guys out, they were looking really hard to see who could score goals. And Victor Arvidsson being back, I mean, 9 goals in 9 games. The hat trick really helped there too, but he only basically hasn't scored in a couple games since he's been back. Arvi's really putting it to the opposition.
Yeah, Justin, just going back to that 7-2 win over the Predators, I mean, for the Preds, 12 players getting points. So you talk about Arvidsson and some of the big dogs on that team, but a lot of players contributing on this Predators club right now.
Absolutely. I mean, Colton Sissons is riding a 5-game point streak right now, and he's really stepped up, especially in the absence of Kyle Turris, who is on the IR again. Kind of had a sandwich time there where he was on the IR for 8 games, came back for a few, and reaggravated whatever his injury is. We're thinking of something to do with the ribs. But yeah, Colton Sissons has really stepped up. He's one of those depth guys where you've seen him centering the fourth line, and he's been centering the second line. He's been a winger on the second line. He's been on the third line with Nick Bonino and Austin Watson. He's getting power play minutes now too. And Colton Sissons has already tied his career high in terms of goals, just about a little over halfway through the season at 10. And so his production is really starting to increase. I mean, Ryan Hartman slowed down a little bit, but Colton Sissons would be that player that I'd be looking at now that he's really started to produce, and you're putting him in all these different kinds of roles, and he's definitely stepped up his game in other players' absences. So the depth there is really showing with him, and it's giving him an opportunity to show off the skill that he has in terms of where the Predators drafted him, and he's shown to be a true leader on his club as well. He was the captain of the Milwaukee Admirals when he was down there, and so a lot of these guys came up through Milwaukee when Colton Sissons was there, and so they obviously respect his leadership capabilities, and you see that as well. And then another one is Rocco Grimaldi. He's been a great surprise for this club. He signed in the off came over in the offseason, and it was one of the things that a lot of people expected to be an AHL type of signing, but he was called up, and he's really been a great spark in the bottom six. Rocco Grimaldi has, and he's chipped in some great goals, some great defensive plays as well, and using his skill set and his body size to really get in the mix there too. So those are two guys that I'm really looking at that have really contributed well and are streaking right now too for the Preds.
Justin Bradford is our guest on NHL This Week. We're talking about the Nashville Predators. Justin is with Penalty Box Radio, which airs on ESPN Radio in Nashville. Justin, Roman Josi and PK Subban have been playing together. It doesn't happen all too often, or it hadn't previously happened all too often, but as of late, Peter Laviolette has the two of them playing together. Why do you think that is, and do you think those results maybe are a sign of things to come?
Yeah, it's one of those things everybody was kind of thrown off a bit when they practiced together and they played together last night and did a pretty darn good job. And the reason why, I mean, Mattias Ekholm, Ryan Ellis have history playing together before PK Subban came about. So it was fine there to make the change. And this was a very unique change because while Josi and Subban had maybe played a little bit together when pairings got off, they really didn't have much time together previous to last night. And the way that Peter Laviolette, when asked about it last night, was, well, I mean, they're two elite defensemen and we could put him out there, and just thought, you know, why not? He really didn't have any thought process to it. It was just more of a why not try it out because they're two really good defensemen and just see if it works. And it did because they're planning on putting them together on the power play unit together. So so might as well put them as a pairing out there already. And it shows how they're able to shuffle some of these elite defensemen around and still be successful. It's just kind of scary to see that, too. And then you have Matthias Ekholm, who is already setting career highs and is that guy this year, I think, because every year seems to rotate with the Predators of which defenseman is going to get that attention. Last year, it was Ryan Ellis when he came back from injury. This year, it's Matthias Ekholm. They're starting to get more attention from around the league because, one, his contract is so darn good, and because he's producing points. He's already at 36 points, which is a new career high for him. And again, we're just past the halfway point of the season. So it's interesting to see what they're able to do to shuffle all these defensemen. And then P.K. Subban still looks like he's trying to get back from injury as well. And why not pair him with Roman Josi, who can make up for some things? And when you have four guys that can rotate in and out on the blue line, it's a positive sign for the Preds.
Well, Justin, I got to stick with the defenseman, and you mentioned Matthias Ekholm. He's having a career year, and we know how good P.K. Subban and Roman Josi and Ryan Ellis are, but Dan Hamhuis, to me, is the forgotten guy on the Predators' blue line. I mean, this is a guy who played for Canada at the 2014 Olympics. He was at one time considered a top 20 defenseman in the NHL. How important has he been as a veteran on this team this year?
I mean, it's been the kind of presence in the offseason. A lot of us were looking at it going, okay, that's a good sign to solidify the third pairing. Because, I mean, well, we talk about the top four for the Predators a lot. The third pairing has been very scary and in a bad way for the Nashville Predators because so much of money is spent on the top four that they shuffle around a lot of guys in that third pairing because the Predators have been carrying eight defensemen. I mean, they're rotating Yannick Weber, Matt Irwin, and Tony Boteto into that spot with Dan Hamhuis. And so bringing Hamhuis in, while he may be a little bit slower now, he still has that type of solidification for the third pairing as a stay-at-home defenseman and a guy that's been there before and provides a little bit of leadership as well. So I liked when they brought him in, and I like that he's there. Yannick Weber being back is great because I don't think Matt Irwin and Tony Boteto are having that good of seasons whatsoever. So Weber and Hamhuis are a better pairing. I'd still like to see the Predators make a move for a more solid third pairing defenseman to rotate either with Hamhuis or with Weber. But that's one of those areas that I know a lot of people want the Predators to target as well as a power forward as well, but a third pairing defenseman to go along with Dan Hamhuis because Hamhuis can tack up some minutes on the penalty kill, and he can step up as well because he's had to step up a lot during injuries, and he did that when P.K. Subban was down too. So that's why they made that signing. When injuries happen, Hamhuis can step in and fill in a little bit of a void and be serviceable as well, and that's what you want out of a veteran, and he's been able to do that.
You know, Justin, you hear the word consistency a lot when discussing Kevin Fiala. I'm just curious, how have you seen his season play along here? He's got, you know, 28 points in 48 games, no slouch at all. I mean, how is he looking this season in his development?
He's been frustrating. And that's one of those words that I know a lot of people have used, and even the coaching staff has been a little frustrated at times with Kevin Fiala because you just look at what he did in the previous season. I mean, he had 23 goals last year, 48 points, and he was a little bit on pace before he slowed down last season. People were thinking, hey, he could get to 30 goals, especially with him, Kyle Turris, and Craig Smith are really rolling. This year, he slowed down a little bit, and the thing that's been frustrating is that you see that there are opportunities for him, but he hasn't been able to seal the deal. And that's really frustrating for Kevin Fiala as a guy that's in a contract year. You're expecting him to have a big year to earn that money, but only eight goals is nowhere near what people were expecting from him. They were expecting him to repeat that 20-goal season because he'd only gone up from there. I mean, in his first full season, he had 11 goals in 54 games and then 23 and 80. So the natural progression would be, oh, hey, he should be able to at least match what he did and then some. And he hasn't been able to do that. Now, he's been in a lot of the right places. He hasn't necessarily made the best decisions out there as well. And so that's what people are really looking at right now is what is he still doing to contribute to the offense? And he's piling up some assists. He has 20 assists this season, which is just five shy of his career high last year, 25. So he's still contributing in certain ways. But what the Predators really need him to do is score some goals. That second line still struggles, even with Kyle Turris being out. But Craig Smith and Kevin Fiala need that second line to really get going because the Predators still need depth scoring because teams that are really good, like Winnipeg, can prepare and shut down a top line like what the Predators have and force the other three lines to try to put the puck in. So that's what the Predators need is some depth scoring so they can beat really good teams.
Last question for you, Justin. We mentioned that the Predators farm team in Milwaukee was here in Winnipeg tonight to play the Manitoba Moose. One of the key members of that farm team is Eli Tolvanen. Most everyone has sort of expected Tolvanen to take on this role with the Predators. You know, they expected it when he came over from the KHL last year late in the regular season. They thought he'd win a regular NHL job this year coming out of training camp. He was a member. He played for the World Juniors that just happened in Vancouver. Is there any frustration in the organization with maybe the slower development that Tolvanen is ending up to having to take?
I don't think there's frustration in the organization. I think most of it lies with the fan base, who's expecting this kid to come out and just score at will in the NHL and really force him to move quickly. I think with the organization, at least, they feel comfortable with where he's at and that at least, hey, he decided to stay in North America and play with the Admirals, get more and more used to the games being played over here instead of jetting and going back over to Europe. That was a big step right there early in the season for him to decide to stay here, because he even noted, I'm much closer to the NHL by playing in Milwaukee than I am by playing in Europe. And he's very right. And the good thing is they let him go and play in the World Juniors as well, to play in a big international competition to represent his country. And while he didn't produce like everybody expected, he still went on one goal. He had four assists in that tournament in seven games. So I think the frustration is more on the fan base. The organization is going to be patient for now. He's still so very, very young. Just want to see improvement. He has good vision out there still, too. He has plenty of assists that he's continuing to go out there. What I'm seeing and hearing from people out of Milwaukee is that he's doing a lot of right things. They're just not falling for him right now. But what I try to point fans back to down here in Nashville is Philip Forsberg had a really brief taste of the NHL, and people weren't that impressed with him. Then he went to Milwaukee. He was a little bit slow to start, and then all of a sudden it just clicked. And I think that's what's going to happen with Eli Tolvanen, and it all of a sudden will just click. And now we see where Philip Forsberg is, that it took him two seasons to really make it click, and now he's a consistent 30-goal scorer. Even when he goes through injury, he's a 30-goal scorer, it seems. So I'm just trying to preach patience to the fan base down here, but I think the organization overall, they're okay with where he's at. Just progress and then see what happens next year at camp.
Justin Bradford is with Penalty Box Radio in Nashville. Justin, we appreciate you giving us your time this evening, doing double duty, having just finished with your own program.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. It should be a fun game tomorrow.
Thanks, Justin. We'll talk again real soon. When we come back, we're going to shift our focus to the Anaheim Ducks. Losers of 12 games in a row, Randy Carlyle gets the dreaded vote of confidence.
Pontus Aberg didn't.
Pontus Aberg gets traded earlier today to the Minnesota Wild. We talk about the Ducks up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Things not going great for the Ducks. First period, Jakob Silfverberg getting tied up with Mike Green along the boards. Tweaked something. He left, did not return. Second period, Ryan Kessler laying a hit on Jonathan Erickson along the boards. He tweaked something in his leg. Kessler left the game as well. The Ducks losing two pretty important players.
It was 11 losses in a row after the Jets beat the Ducks on Sunday. Following the game, Ducks general manager Bob Murray came out with a statement. Quote, while it's not my preference to make comments on this topic during the season, our recent play has led to many questions. Our fans are frustrated, rightfully so, and deserve a response from me. At this time, having lost 11 in a row, I'm not considering a coaching change. I am more focused on our players, specifically with who is going to step up in this situation. The way we played tonight was a step in the right direction, and it was. They should have beat the Jets, to be perfectly honest. But we need much, much more. We have higher expectations for this group, and they should expect more from themselves. That was Bob Murray, Anaheim Ducks executive vice president and general manager, after the Jets defeated the Ducks on Sunday. Well, lo and behold, the Ducks lost their 12th game in a row last night in Detroit. In Detroit, mind you, not a great team. Playing better hockey as of late. You gave the Jets all they could handle on Friday, beat the Minnesota Wild, I believe, on Saturday, if I'm not mistaken. But the Ducks thought they might have had a good chance to beat the Detroit Red Wings. They were up 1-0. They lost 3-1. 12 losses in a row for the Anaheim Ducks. When does this end? It's got to end at some point in time. And do you agree with Bob Murray that he made the right decision in not pursuing a coaching change at this point in time?
No, I mean, I'm biased because I'm a big Randy Carlyle guy, and I think he's an excellent coach, but I don't think anybody saw this coming, guys. I mean, I think a lot of people thought that the Ducks were going to be kind of a fringe playoff team. I don't think many people had the Ducks as a Stanley Cup contender or a team that was going to compete for the Pacific Division crown. I certainly didn't. And what's amazing, and we talked about this on Saturday before the Ducks game, is that the Ducks are still only 2 points behind a wild card spot.
Mm-hmm.
2 points.
Yeah.
So they're not out of it. But then you look at the news that came out of Anaheim today. Ryan Kessler's been placed on IR. They've sent Kiefer Sherwood and Jake Dotchin down to the San Diego Gulls. They've called up Troy Terry. They've called up Max Jones. I mean, when you're talking about Troy Terry and Max Jones, you're talking about rookies.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean,
the future of, you know, key mm-hmm. members of
sure.
the future.
Max
rookies.
Comtois was the captain of the junior team. I mean, there's a lot to be excited about when you're talking about the future of the Ducks, guys. But when you consider that, you know, Ryan Kessler is a guy that you depend on, it might not be for offense, but a guy that you depend on to win faceoffs and just be the veteran face of this team. I mean, after Ryan Getzlaff and Rickard Rakell, who's not having a good season, you throw in, you know, a few other players. You know, John Gibson's obviously having a great year, but this depth of this team is just not very good. So, yeah, I can see why Bob Murray made the comments, Drew. I mean, a lot of people were wondering if Randy Carlyle was going to keep his job after that game against the Jets.
Well, can you think of another situation in the NHL where a coach has lost 12 consecutive games and didn't lose his job?
Well, the reason why is because prior to this losing streak, the Ducks were third in the Pacific.
Yeah, they'd won nine in a row.
You look at their record. I mean, they're essentially 500. I mean, they're a little bit under 500 when you consider the overtime losses.
You know, they've won I mean, they're not a little under 500. They've won 19 of their 47 games. I mean, that's not a little.
But they're 2 points out of a wild card spot.
They're getting inflated by the loser point. I mean,
I
mean, in regulation, they've won well less than 50% of their games. They are not a very good hockey team.
The Western Conference is not very good this
year.
You're
absolutely right.
I mean, in past years, Sean, you'd have to have 95, 96, maybe even 99 points.
Yeah.
Remember the first year the Jets made the playoffs? Didn't they have 99 points that year?
I think they did. Yeah.
This year, 89 might get you in.
Yeah, the Western, you're absolutely right. Anything beyond the top two in the Central and the top three in the Pacific is crap. And they might as well. And I mean, they don't have a chance.
And I mean, you're talking about Anaheim only having 19 wins. Colorado only has 21.
You're right.
Right?
So everybody's getting boosted up. The bottom teams that are still in playoff spots are getting boosted by the loser point. But are you surprised, Sean, that he's keeping his job?
I'm not surprised he's keeping his job, because I think that, listen, when we were talking about the Anaheim Ducks, especially when they were sitting second in the Pacific early in the season, mm-hmm. we kept looking at that goal differential, and we just kept saying, we said it on the show, we were saying it on the Saturday show, is it sustainable when you give up as many goals as the Anaheim Ducks were giving up? John Gibson was playing out of his mind. Now, whether we saw this regression to 12 straight losses, I don't think anyone could have predicted that. But eventually, that play catches up to you. And those the minus, was it 18, 19, 20 goal differential? It's at 30 now.
Mm-hmm.
But prior to that,
yeah, they were.
I mean, they were playing with fire. Mm-hmm. And now it's kind of regressing, right? You can't sustain that type of goal differential for this long. So we're seeing kind of this regression back to the mean, and whether Anaheim is as deep, they need help scoring. There's no doubt about that. And it's starting to weigh on the veterans. Ryan Getzlaff is saying this is the hardest stretch of his career.
Let's talk about the two trades they made, because they made two trades since losing, you know, their 12th game in a row, since losing their 11th game in a row on Sunday. They traded veteran Andrew Cogliano to the Dallas Stars.
I was surprised by that trade.
Yeah, one of the longest-serving members of the team.
Yeah, in exchange for Devin Shore.
And he scored against the Jets.
Yeah.
He was the guy who scored that bad goal on Hellebuck.
Absolutely. and then earlier today, they acquired Justin Kloose from the Minnesota Wild in exchange for Pontus Aberg. Pontus Aberg happened to be their second leading goal scorer, as he had 11 goals on the season for the Ducks, a team that can't score any goals. He'd been a healthy scratch as of late. Do either of these moves, you know, move the needle at all for the Anaheim Ducks?
No, of course not. I mean, when you're talking about Justin Kloose, undrafted player who's a career minor leaguer
right.
at this point. So he's a guy that I imagine is going to play the majority of the season with San Diego.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean,
certainly that, not a difference maker
right,
by any stretch.
And, I mean, Pontus Aberg, you mentioned, he had 11 goals, so I'm not really sure.
I think he's been scratched for the past four games. So something, something.
I mean, when you need goals, even if a guy isn't scoring, he was scoring last month. So a little bit puzzling to me. And when, when you're talking about Andrew Cogliano for Devin Shore, I mean, clearly you're getting younger there. But Andrew Cogliano has been one of their most consistent players. He's been a staple of that third line.
Right? And he doesn't get hurt.
And he's been on the second line, too.
Isn't Andrew Cogliano one of those
That's a shake-up move.
Yeah. Isn't that one of those veteran players you sort of want in your dressing room? I mean, it seems...
during a stretch like this. That's why, you know, there's certain... To me, trading a guy like Andrew Cogliano, Drew, is akin to trading, like, an Adam Lowry. And by that, I mean, you look at Lowry, and he's so consistent, and he does so many things. Could the Jets still be a first-place team without him? Probably. But you just you wouldn't ever expect the Jets to trade Lowry because he's so valuable, right? On the penalty kill.
Yeah.
Like I said, he's got the toughness. He's a power forward. Same thing with Andrew Cogliano, very fast. He has never missed a game because of health reasons.
Yeah.
Remember, he missed the game because of a suspension.
That's what cost him his Ironman streak.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, when I saw that, I was like, okay, you know, this is kind of like you said before, Drew, if you're not going to fire your coach... Okay, well, let's make a trade and see what happens here.
Do either of these trades do enough, though?
Devin Shore is a good hockey player. I mean, Devin Shore was playing well for the Dallas Stars. He can score. He's a fast guy. He's got good skill. But, I mean, to me, that trade is kind of a wash.
Is Devin Shore going to put this team on his back and lead them out of this? I can't see
that
happening.
They need more out of Ricard Raquel.
How about Adam Henrique? 8 goals this season. They need more out of him, too.
Yeah.
I mean Corey Perry's going to come back sometime
and not score anymore.
It's going to be too late by then.
To me, I mean, you look at the last two games for the Ducks. Against the Jets, that game was there for the taking. They had a 2-goal lead. They're up 2-0, and they're up 3-2. That game was there for the taking for the Ducks to end this losing
And who
streak.
Tied that game? The Adam Lowry line. Ben Chiarot play after a great shift of cycling the puck down low. So
yeah, a seeing-eyed shot from the point.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to 3-on-3 overtime where anything can happen. It just goes to show you that the Ducks are a little bit snake bit, that it ends up being the Jets who get the victory. Ultimately, you know, Brian Little scoring with, you know, mere seconds to go in the overtime before the shootout. And then last night in Detroit, they're up 1-0. And yeah, it's only 1-0, but
there's some fluky goals against too. Just goals that you got to look up at the sky and be like, "Come on!"
It is just remarkable that they've gone this many games in a row without losing or without winning. Rather, they get their next opportunity to end the streak tomorrow evening. They're going to be in Minnesota to play the Wild. When we come back, our good friend Josh Cooper joins us for more talk about the Ducks, and we'll talk about the LA Kings as well. He covers both teams for TheAthletic.com. You're listening to NHL This Week, hour number 2 up next here on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Second hour of NHL This Week starts now on TSN Radio 1290. It's brought to you by our friends at Keener Jerseys, located at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherbourne. At Keener Jerseys, making a better jersey is just what they do. To have your jersey customized or to order new jerseys for your rec team, go to KeenerJerseys.com. Keener Jerseys, they're on your team.
Let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Sean Asor, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend, Josh Cooper. Josh covers the Anaheim Ducks and the LA Kings for TheAthletic.com. Joshua, good evening, and how are you?
I am great. You also forgot to mention I cover The Bachelor as well.
Yes, don't worry. Ezzy, you'll get to that coming up momentarily.
Good. Josh, what's up, man?
Hey, how's it going?
It's good. I missed the last time you were on. I was in Arizona at the time, but not anymore.
We can send you back to Arizona, you know.
You also called the show from Arizona.
Yeah, you also did call the show from Arizona.
Yeah, that was
fun. Yeah, we can make arrangements if necessary. Josh, we'll let Ezzy get to The Bachelor, you know, at some point during this interview, but
just
we want to...
Just make sure he doesn't ask the dumb questions.
You know, I honestly can't prevent him from asking. I mean, I don't know if his bachelor-related questions are dumb or not dumb.
Josh, will you accept my rose?
That's a dumb question. I apologize, Josh. That was a dumb question.
Yes, absolutely.
It's beautiful, you know, the two of you. It's, love is in the air, which is, I guess, better than what it was over the weekend, say maybe Friday in particular, with Randy Carlyle, Anaheim Ducks head coach. They've now lost 12 in a row after losing to Detroit last night. Bob Murray has given Randy Carlyle the vote of confidence. I mean, it's hard in this day and age in the NHL to lose 12 games in a row. It's really quite an impressive feat, to be honest. Are you surprised that Bob Murray has decided to not make any coaching changes despite the 12 losses in a row?
Well, yes and no. Yes, in the sense of, I mean, as you said, like they're making history here with 12 losses in a row. I mean, I believe the record for losses in a row by the Anaheim Ducks / Mighty Ducks franchise was 8, and they've officially blown that out of the water. And so now they're up to 12 losses in a row. So on the one hand, I don't quite understand it. On the other hand, I look at the team, I look at the franchise, I look at the players. I look at the fact that Bob Murray is generally takes a very patient approach with his team. He always takes a very long view, though I guess you could maybe argue against that with some of the trades they've made the last couple of days. That I don't want to say they've been head-scratchers, because I kind of understand them, but I think that the fan base isn't exactly thrilled by some of the moves. And you just have to look at the fact that I don't really know if Randy Carlyle is the coach or Dallas Eakins is the coach or, you know, Cho Blake is the coach or whoever. Like, I mean, I don't know how this team really how good it is. I mean, I think they've hit a point where they've, and our Eric Stevens wrote about it at the start of the season, as they've kind of hit the dreaded middle. And I think they hid that for a little bit when they had a bit of a winning stretch. They're coming from behind a lot of games, but also when you're coming from behind a lot of games, it means you're not leading in pretty much all these games and you're still winning. So on the one hand, it's good you're coming, you basically show the ability to come back. On the other hand, you're not getting a lead, which is not good. But I just don't see a path forward this season when it comes to making a coaching change. I think things are set up nicely, in my opinion, for Dallas Eakins next year to take over. His assistants from San Diego, or I think one or two of them, are up in Anaheim right now. You're going to have some of his players up from San Diego next season playing key roles. It makes sense he would be the guy. But I don't really see it this year. But also the other thing, too, with Dallas Eakins is the fact that, yes, we're still sort of unsure of how he does the NHL level just because of his time in Edmonton, though I do think a lot of us look at that and sort of think that it's a situation where not a lot of people could have succeeded. However, he's someone who's an incredible developmental coach. And because he's such a good developmental coach, maybe the best scenario is to keep him in the minors developing these prospects for this year so that, that way they're ready to rock for next season. And the team can kind of maybe pull what San Jose did a few years ago, where they had that one down year in 2014-15 and they made the cup final in 2015-16. I mean, I don't think Anaheim is the same, has the same caliber of group, but I think they do have some good prospects, and I think it's more important for them right now to have Dallas Eakins developing them in the minors and being at the NHL level with a losing veteran squad.
Now, Josh, you mentioned some of those head-scratching trades earlier, and Pontus Aberg was traded for Justin Kloose earlier today, but a couple of days ago, that was the bigger trade. Andrew Cogliano was traded to the Dallas Stars for Devin Shore, and considering that Cogliano has been such a consistent player for the Ducks for the last 8 years, is that just a trade that's made to shake up the roster?
Well, I think to a degree, yes, but also there's a rather large salary cap saving bringing Devin Shore. And also, Devin Shore is a very high-character player from what I've gathered, checking in with some people I know in Dallas, spoke incredibly highly of him. And he's a guy who I've heard nothing but very, very, very positive things about. So I think it is kind of maybe to shake things up a little bit, but also I think there's a huge salary component there with Andrew Cogliano, where you're seeing a bit of a decline, maybe only because I do, and watching the Ducks this year, kind of feel like Ryan Kessler has dragged him down. And I mean, look, Kessler's been a great player for a number of years, but he has not been good the last couple of seasons. Obviously, his body's breaking down as he ages, but I think it was more for
salary cap considerations. However, when you look at just sort of the timeline of events where Bob Murray is basically back the coach that, and look, I understand that the entire fan base isn't on Twitter and on our comments, but from what I've read on Twitter and our comments, does not like the coach. And then you trade a guy who's super-duper popular like Andrew Cogliano. Just the optics of it, and I know that Ducks are an organization that's really cared about optics, and understandably, the great organizations in hockey don't care about optics when they make moves, but it just does not look good if you're a Ducks fan. And you would trade a guy like that the day after backing a coach is pretty unpopular right now.
You know, Josh, you got to feel for a guy like Ryan Getzlaff, who just, you can see the emotion on him, just these losses just completely weighing on a guy who's not used to being in these situations.
Oh, and I went in the locker room after the Pittsburgh game, and he was just, like, stunned that he had to answer questions about another loss. It was like he couldn't believe it. And he's a guy who I will back to the end. I mean, he's someone who I think completely gets it. I think especially the last few years has, and not that he didn't beforehand, but really from what I've seen out of him the last few years, has shown his stripes as a leader, a guy that has set an incredible example for the younger players, brings just such consistency every night, in some respects is very underrated in regards to how he has played historically and how he'll probably be looked on as a great player in this league. I mean, to me, he's one of the best centers in the NHL for the last 10 years, maybe a top three player in the entire league, and just probably doesn't get the publicity he deserves just because he's playing out here in L.A. and in Orange County and all places. So, I think that he's worked his tail off to try to get this team back in shape. When they had their winning streak earlier in the season, you could tell that it was because they had worked through it, that he had helped push the team through it. He's been just an absolute rock for them, and you can definitely tell this is completely grating on him. As the guy who was a gold medalist for Team Canada, Stanley Cup champion, someone who's had a very proud career, I don't think he's enjoying this kind of in his early-ish to mid-ish 30s as a hockey player.
Josh Cooper is our guest on NHL this week. Josh covers the Anaheim Ducks and the LA Kings for TheAthletic.com. Josh, in addition to the trades they made, the Ducks also called up Troy Terry and Max Jones from San Diego, the San Diego Gulls of the AHL. We know these players are the future and that they're highly touted prospects. Are they ready to step in and make contributions at the NHL level?
I don't know if they're ready to step in and make contributions, but I think you have to give them a shot. Terry's been awesome in the minors. I mean, he looked a little overmatched at the NHL level, but, I mean, our Corey Fondman is our prospects guy, had him very high in his ranking. Max Jones, a first-round pick type guy who, again, it represents the future. And I think one of the things with the Ducks that I personally like when you look at their long-term future and how they kind of should pan out is their young guys are all NHL players who I think, in my opinion, have 500-plus NHL game potential, if not more. And that's great when you look at just the system in general, because a lot of times young players may not hit 300, 400. I mean, that's when we've almost been spoiled by the amount of players who've hit 1,000 games this year. We think it's normal. It's not. It's hard to reach that level. It's hard to – very good players don't reach 700. So I think they have a lot of guys who can be good pieces for them in the near term, give them some salary cap savings that they're going to need. I think Max Jones and Troy Terry certainly are part of that equation.
Now, Josh, just switching to the LA Kings, the other team that you cover for The Athletic, they lost last night to the Minnesota Wild. They're in Dallas tomorrow. They're in the middle of a three-game road trip, still last place in the Western Conference. I mean, if you're a Kings fan, are you just looking forward to seeing what type of trades that Rob Blake is going to make before the end of February?
Well, they did forget about everything on Saturday when Snoop Dogg was at the game. So I think that helped kind of ease some of the mindset of the Kings fans. But joking aside, I mean, Lisa Dillman, our Kings writer, and I, we've been writing these rebuilding the Kings pieces for the last few weeks on the case for and against trading different players. And, I mean, to be perfectly honest, I think there's a case that you can make to literally trade every single core player on that roster just because of how the season has gone, their age, their salary, what a rebuild would look like with this team. I mean, I think the difference between the Kings and the Ducks is that the Ducks have been able to retool on the fly a little bit better with their drafting. The Kings have given up so many first-round picks for so many straight years. They thought they were in their window of opportunity that they don't have a lot of players like the Ducks have who can step in and, again, as I mentioned earlier, play 500, have the potential to play 500-plus NHL games and be key core members moving forward that can help in a rebuild and potentially step in next season to supplement the older core they have. They don't have that. So I think that it's going to be a very interesting time for Rob Wick, and it's something that, I mean, rebuilding is an interesting thing because not all rebuilds are made the same. You have to get the right players. You have to hit the right notes with your trade. You have to keep the right guys. And so I really don't know what he's going to do because, again, like, I mean, yeah, they just signed Anze Kopitar to a contract a couple of years ago. Doughty's contract kicks in next year. You can make the case to even deal those guys. Just with how the season's gone and the fact that they make a lot of money and the team doesn't look like it's in very good shape for the next several years. So it's going to be very, and this is my favorite sports cliche in media, it'll be very interesting, but it really will be very interesting to see how this all shakes in.
You know, Josh, going back to the DOGG, I'm just curious, what did you think of Snoop Dogg's play-by-play artistry?
Literally the greatest pop culture hockey night of my life.
I completely agree.
I mean, nothing is compared to that in my existence being a sports fan. I mean, you have to remember, like, he's a freestyle rapper. So, and you can see that with him doing the play-by-play. It's just so smooth. And, yeah, I mean, he's not a polished play-by-play guy, but, like, he can think up words really fast. And he can come up with opinions and thoughts very, very quickly and make it seem very natural. And, I mean, the Kings have been doing this all year. They've had Jeff Garland. They've had Eric Stone Street, two big-name actors. They've had Andy Lasser, who's on the Ellen Show, who's like a huge fan of theirs. They had Thomas Middleditch from my favorite TV show, Silicon Valley. But nothing has hit quite like this. I mean, Snoop, when you're around him, he's such a mega star. Like, you feel that aura and that presence. And it was, I mean, like, I remember when I'm sitting up in the press box, I'm looking down at ice level, and he's in the hallway with his DJ gear, watching the Rams game, and there's two women dressed as Princess Leia dancing behind him, because it was also Star Wars night, by the way. Like, it was almost like, where else would I be right now? Like, this is the best place you could possibly be in the sporting world at this moment.
Maybe they should throw in Snoop Dogg into an episode of The Bachelor.
I think they've done that, actually. I have to look. I'm pretty sure that I think they had Ludacris last year, actually. Or no, it was Lil Jon. Sorry, it was Lil Jon. They had Lil Jon last year.
All I know, Josh, is Demi's up to no good.
She really is, isn't she? I'm not a fan of Demi at all. It was funny. I was actually... when she said, like, the cougar claws are out for the 30-year-old, I was like, really?
Yeah.
Like, what the hell?
Yeah,
like,
Colton's in trouble.
Colton. Oh, my God. Oh, Colton is. I read the spoilers, guys. Colton's in a lot of trouble. Oh, my God. It's this is going to be a season for the ages. But the one thing I would really love is for them to cool down the virginity jokes. I'm getting kind of over it at this point.
Do you actually believe he's a virgin?
It's so hard for me to believe just because he was a pro athlete and he's very good. I mean, look, he's a very good looking guy. And clearly he's the bachelor, so he's probably a bit of a smooth talker. I don't know. They say he is, but you know, you'd think that because they made such a big deal out of it, that someone would have come out by now and challenged the claim, but I'm a little over the joke. It's getting kind of absurd at this point. I say cool it off until you hit the fantasy suite, and then we can talk about it again.
There you have it. Josh Cooper covers the LA Kings, the Anaheim Ducks, and the Bachelor for us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Josh, I'm pulling for Hannah B., a.k.a. Miss Alabama.
Oh, yeah. It's so funny. I think we may get into a brawl at some point for Miss North Carolina, and they apparently don't like each other.
Well, I'm just going to be on pins and needles to wait to see how that resolves itself now. And we'll definitely have you on, towards the
end. Josh and I watch The Bachelor with our wives, okay? Like, don't hate on us.
Read a book. Read a book. Both of you, read a book. I have higher expectations for you both.
Actually, my wife keeps trying to get me to stop watching the show. I'm the one that's driving this bus in this household.
Yeah, me too.
Thank you, Josh.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks,
we'll
buddy.
Talk again soon. Bye, Josh. Josh Cooper of TheAthletic.com joins us. When we come back...
Did that just happen?
I honestly don't know. I think I may have passed out there for a minute. When we come back, Jake Gardiner getting booed mercilessly at home on Monday night.
I'm going to boo you, Drew.
Oh, please. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Yeah, I mean... That hasn't happened before, that's for sure. Not something you want to hear. Plays happen in the game, and fans are passionate, and they want to win.
That was Jake Gardiner of the Toronto Maple Leafs. After he was booed on Monday night every time he touched the puck, he had made a mistake earlier in the game. Carl Soderberg beat him for a loose puck. It ended up in the back of the Leafs' net. It was a bad night for the Leafs, and the fans decided that their whipping boy was going to be Jake Gardiner, defenseman for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Welcome back to NHL This Week, this segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the whole family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Before we get talking about Jake Gardiner, right now on TSN 3, if you are inclined to enjoy some tennis, Milos Raonic and Stan Wawrinka are into the fourth set, Raonic winning the second and third sets. Wawrinka took the first set. All sets have gone to a tiebreaker, so if you want some high-quality competitive tennis, turn it on right now. TSN 3, Milos Raonic looking to win the fourth set and win the match.
Another point for Milos.
Another game for Milos. Exactly. Jake Gardiner booed every time. Is it the beginning of the end for Jake Gardiner in Toronto? We remember what happened in Game 7 last year in the
Leafs
playoffs.
Leafs fans need to – let's get right into this. Leafs fans need to give Jake Gardiner a break here.
They need to chill.
I mean, yes, was Jake Gardiner a little bit laissez-faire on that goal? Yeah. I mean, I didn't watch the game live, Drew, because we were doing something else. But, I mean, when you talk about...
It was Monday night. What were you doing? You were watching The Bachelor, weren't you?
Yes.
Go on.
Jake Gardner's a great defenseman. Gardner had 52 points last year. I mean, this is a very talented defenseman, a former first-round pick. The fact that Leafs fans seem to always need one or two players... I mean, you look at what they did to Phil Kessel.
Sure.
Look what they did to Dion Phaneuf. I mean, Leafs fans love to pick on one player. Now
I'm gonna interrupt you for a second there on Phil Kessel, because I think that was members of the media in Toronto who did that to Phil Kessel.
The fans gave him a pretty hard time as well.
I think there were certain members of the media in Toronto who made up stories about Phil Kessel more than the fans getting on him necessarily. But if you want to say Larry Murphy, who famously was booed every time he touched the puck as a member of the Toronto Maple Leafs, got traded to the Red Wings, and then won two Stanley Cups with the Red Wings. I'm all in on that one with you.
Chris, do we have the clip from a couple of days ago? Or sorry, it was yesterday, Ray Ferraro on TSN 1050. Drew, if we can play that clip, because Ray Ferraro talks about Jake Gardiner being booed on Leafs lunch with O-Dog and Hayes and McLennan. And I really thought that Ray Ferraro made a really good point when he was talking about Gardiner.
The one thing, about Gardiner, I would say, is that he does everything so easy that when it doesn't go well, it looks really bad. And so, he made the mistake against Boston that cost a goal against. And then, everybody in the, us and written in the articles and, everybody else that's talking about it is talking about the mistake of Gardiner and Zaitsev. Like, somehow Zaitsev, flies under the radar. Like, that's his partner, right? Like, there's no real help there. Like, right. Zaitsev's just there. He's got three assists more than us guys this year, which I don't understand how that's even possible. But Gardner becomes the guy, when he makes a mistake, you really notice it.
Yeah.
Like, it stands out. And last night's mistake was one of four in a row, four goals in a row that the Leafs were completely outworked on.
That was Ray Ferraro from TSN 1050 in Toronto talking about the Leafs, their struggles, and why Gardner gets blamed, Zaitsev and other players fly under the radar.
Right, and you know, he's right. I mean, Zaitsev doesn't have any goals.
He's got three assists in 45 games.
I mean, Zaitsev, to me, and I don't think a lot of people talk about this, but Zaitsev was signed to a 7-year contract.
Yeah,
terrible. I think he's still got 6 years left on that contract. And
5 years after this year.
Right, and I think you could argue that, you know, Zaitsev isn't a top four defenseman. He's better suited to be a third pairing guy that plays, you know, 12 or 14 minutes. But, you know, Ferraro talks about Jake Gardner. I really like Gardner's game. Can he be better defensively? Yes. And I think that's up to Mike Babcock to kind of figure out, you know, who is best suited to play with him, guys. But I think this all comes down to what we talked about prior to the season. Everybody knew, Shawnee, that the Leafs were going to score a lot of goals with Tavares and Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and Patrick Marleau. The list goes on and on and on. But what did we say the Leafs needed?
Defense.
A top four shutdown defenseman. And they still need that. I mean, Morgan Riley is arguably a Norris Trophy finalist right now.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Ron Hainsey, Nikita Zaitsev, Igor Ozaganov, I realize he scored a goal on Monday night, but if you're Brendan Shanahan, Kyle Dubas, you have to trade for a defenseman here, don't you?
Yeah, must. Because if Jake Gardner is gone, is Travis Dermott ready to step up and take on that and the increased role in those increased minutes? Because Jake Gardner is averaging over 21 minutes a game.
And Dermott's still a young defenseman. I mean, this is only Dermott's second full NHL season.
So you would have Dermott and Zaitsev as your second pairing. I mean,
I don't think Gardner's going anywhere this season. I don't think they're going.
No, I wasn't saying that they should trade Gardner. I was saying that they need to trade for someone to play with Gardner.
Oh, absolutely, to reinforce the defense. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes. He's a UFA at season's end, and he's going to make a lot of money on the open market because
teams would kill to have a guy of his caliber.
Left-shot defenseman who scored at that level.
Who can move the puck and an elite level.
Yeah, don't come around. So he's going to get $6 million a year.
Right.
And Leafs fans can boo him, and I understand that at some point in time, some marriages just need to come to an end, and this is probably one of those marriages. But if Leafs fans don't think that they need Jake Gardner for the remainder of the season because the parade route has already been laid out, they're fooling themselves.
Mm-hmm. Alex Pietrangelo, for me, makes so much sense for the Leafs.
Yeah.
And I know you're going to have to give up a lot, but do you give up a first-round pick and Kasperi Kapanen for Pietrangelo?
I don't know. If you're the Blues right now, you know, are you trying? You're only 4 points out. You're not a very good team, admittedly. But are you? You got some games in hand. Are you holding on for dear life that you can maybe get into that final playoff spot? You know,
you're right though. I mean, Jake Gardner's gone after this year.
There's no question.
I mean, they just can't afford him, right? Because you're going to have to pay Matthews. You're going to have to pay Marner. Yeah.
They're going to pay Zaitsev $4.5 million a year.
I mean, Zaitsev's contract looks horrible. I mean, he's just not very good.
It's a bad contract. Jake Gardner getting a bit of the bum's rush in Toronto. You know, there's a lot of the upper echelon teams, and you know who the upper echelon teams are going to be very interesting to watch approaching the trade deadline because it's an arms race because there's really six, maybe seven true Stanley Cup contenders, and then everyone else is just crap. When we come back, Ryan Wallace is going to join us. He's the radio host for the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. He's up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number two. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. This segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality home-style food since 1985. For freshly made and fresh frozen foods delivered right to your door, visit shopbernsteins.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program Ryan Wallace, radio host for the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Ryan, good evening. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, guys, it's great to be back on in Canada. So anytime you want to talk to me, I will be willing and able.
Well, famous last words, Ryan, but we appreciate you joining us tonight in any event. Obviously, the Jets and the Golden Knights made each other's acquaintance last night. A game that can really be pinpointed. I mean, the turning point to me is the Golden Knights get 6 power play opportunities, and what happens is they actually end up giving up one goal, the shorthanded goal to Kyle Connor that opened the scoring. Is that power play an area of concern for the Golden Knights?
You know, it's funny. I was kind of, we were talking about the power play today, and obviously when you go over 6 in a game, especially a game that, yeah, it's 4-1 the final score, but it was really a 2-1 game. It was a close hockey game. When you go over 6, that you're going to have questions, but it's not like the power play was without chances. Certainly the Golden Knights had plenty of opportunities to score. They were getting pucks to high danger areas. Brassois was fantastic. I mean, I don't know if that's a common occurrence for him. I know he's 10-1-1 now, but he played fantastic last night. But is it an area of concern? Yes, because you're not getting goals. However, with what the Golden Knights have right now as far as personnel, with Riley Smith out of the lineup, with Colin Miller out of the lineup, 2 key pieces on the power play, I don't really know if there's anything else the Golden Knights can do schematically to get more production out of the power play.
Ryan, Brandon Peary scored yesterday for the Golden Knights. He's now got, I think he's got 8 goals on the season, if I'm not mistaken, in 11 games. And this is a guy who was well over a point per game in the American Hockey League with the Chicago Wolves. And is there any chance that the Golden Knights send Brandon Peary down just the way he's producing right now?
Well, they could have a couple of games ago, and he wouldn't have had to clear waivers. But now Brandon Peary has played over his 10 games, so he would have to clear waivers. And I don't think George McPhee has any illusions that Brandon Peary would clear waivers. Somebody somewhere would pick him up because he's just proven too valuable. So I do believe Brandon Peary is going to be with this team for the long run. And that's kind of, it's interesting that you bring up kind of the turning point in the game last night is the fact that Kyle Connor scores that shorthanded goal, his first shorthanded goal that the Golden Knights have allowed. And it was Brandon Peary that committed the turnover. And that's been the knock on him, right? That he doesn't necessarily put the pucks into strong areas, and he's not great away from the puck. That was probably the first major mistake that Brandon Peary has made with the puck in one of those decisions. And it ends up being one of the turning points of the game. But yeah, from a production standpoint and just what he's brought to this team, especially through all the injuries, I think Brandon Peary is here at least for the remainder of this season.
You know, Ryan, personally, I mean, I don't speak for the Winnipeg Jets bench, who was the biggest fan of this tactic, but I love what Marc-Andre Fleury did, essentially shoveling snow into his crease as he was getting pulled for the empty net. You just got to love the effort and a little bit of the jovialism behind it involved with a guy like Marc-Andre Fleury, who's a notorious fun-loving guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, we're kind of used to it by now, right? Because we're around it all the time and we see some of the things that he does just in practice alone that kind of alleviates the mood and then brings some levity to the situation. But I mean, it's a 2-1 hockey game. I would argue that the Golden Knights played well enough to win last night, mm-hmm. and pucks just aren't really bouncing your way. It's not like Fleury was particularly strong in that game, but he's still having fun. He's still enjoying what he's doing out there. And it makes you wonder why other goalies haven't tried to do that before.
It certainly, you're right about that. It was really interesting, and I liked the chuckle on the bench as Sean alluded to it. Ryan Wallace is our guest on NHL this week. We're talking about the Vegas Golden Knights. Ryan is the radio host for the Golden Knights Insider Show. You know, Ryan, going back to the Brandon Peary having to clear waivers comment, you know, when they get healthy and guys like Riley Smith come back into the lineup, who do you see going down if it's not going to be Brandon Peary?
Well, I think that you have to look at maybe who's not really proven themselves to the point where they have a position that can't be replaced. And I look at a guy like Oscar Lindberg, who is serviceable enough, can fill in a lot of different places, but doesn't do anything that particularly stands out. I think Gerard Gallant really trusts and likes Ryan Carpenter. So I don't know that Ryan Carpenter would be the guy that goes through waivers. And the interesting thing with the Golden Knights, and we had George McPhee on our show last week, and I asked him this question, if he would be open to carrying 14 forwards and 7 defensemen as opposed to the 13 forwards and 8 defensemen that he likes to carry, because you will, when Colin Miller comes back, have Brad Hunt, who will be on the roster, and John Merrill, who's played very good in Miller's absence, on the roster. So if you're willing to part with one of those two defensemen, either Merrill or Hunt, you might be able to save yourself a forward up front where really you have the majority of your extra players. You still have Valentin Zhukov on the roster, who has only played 9 minutes as a Golden Knight. I don't really think that George McPhee or Gerard Gallant can really get a handle on what Zhukov is and what he might bring to the table. But you really only have to worry about it right until the rosters expand, which is not that far off. So maybe the Golden Knights can figure out a way to not get healthy until after the 25th.
Yes, you mentioned not far off, and that's, of course, the NHL trade deadline, about 5 weeks or so away. The Golden Knights were certainly active at the trade deadline last year. What area do you think is a priority for them entering, 5 weeks away from the trade deadline?
You know, that's an interesting question. I asked McPhee about that last week, and he doesn't really know what this team can be because they haven't really been healthy all year. I mean, you're still out, you're still without Eric Halla. Right now you're without Riley Smith. You're without Colin Miller. So when those guys are healthy, you might look at this team and they might have a third line of Brandon Peary, Cody Eakin, and Eric Halla. I mean, that's a possibility heading in toward the playoffs, assuming that Halla is not done for the season and can come back before the playoffs. So if you look at that third line, I don't think that scoring is going to be an issue for this team. And defensively, they've been pretty good. I would like to maybe see an upgrade over Derek Englund, just on that second pair, maybe somebody that can move the puck a little bit quicker, that's got a little bit more speed getting back and covering for Shea Theodore. But I don't know that you need to go outside of the organization for that. There are a lot of young guys that, like a Nicholas Hague or an Eric Brandstrom, who had a very good World Junior, that I think might be able to fill that void. So if I'm George McPhee, I kind of stay pat at this deadline, especially when you consider that Ryan Reeves and his acquisition is really the only deadline acquisition last year that worked out well for the Golden Knights.
Ryan, obviously yesterday a big focus was Paul Stastny, who was acquired by the Jets prior to last year's trade deadline, and then he was a key player for the Jets in the playoffs, especially in that second round against the Nashville Predators, and he picked up an assist on Brandon Peary's goal, and we know that he missed the first 30 games of this year with that knee injury, and even though he started off a little bit slow this year with the Golden Knights, is he finally starting to come around and be that player that they gave the big bucks to?
Yeah, I think so. I think with Paul Stastny, it's not necessarily just about the goal scoring and assists and points and stuff like that. I think you can really see how Paul thinks the game rubbing off on some of the younger guys like Alex Tuch. Alex Tuch's had a monster year. He's tied for the lead in goals. He's got he has the most assists and the most points on this team, and he's a second year player. And I think a lot of that has to do with playing with Paul Stastny and kind of picking his brain a little bit on where to go and what to do and how to be a professional in this league. But big game situations, that's where we're starting to see Paul Stastny really kind of separate himself. You mentioned the assist last night on the goal. Not really much going well for the Golden Knights. He's right in the middle of it. He's been in the middle of things. And that second line for the Golden Knights since Paul Stastny returned to the lineup has really been the line that's been going for them consistently, because offensively they haven't gotten a whole ton from Jonathan Marchessault, William Karlsson, and who are either Max Pacioretty, Riley Smith, or Brandon Peary on that top line.
Ryan, there was a really interesting feature in the Jets Golden Knights broadcast last night about how the Golden Knights have been able to, not so much even build a fandom as around Vegas, but really grow the game at the grassroots level around the community. And it just seems like this community and, Vegas and Nevada have really taken to hockey. And it just, from what we saw in this feature, it just seems like the game has become extremely popular around the area.
Yeah, I mean, the Golden Knights are number one for sure right now in Las Vegas, and I don't think it's particularly close. I mean, you've got UNLV. The Raiders are coming in a couple of years, but right now the only thing that's tangible that you can grab onto if you're from Las Vegas or you live in the area is the Golden Knights. And the thing that I kind of hearken it back to is this organization, this team, made Vegas a place to live, a place to grow a family, a place to be proud of, more so than just a place where everybody comes to gamble, get drunk, and that's all that Vegas is. It was the first time, I think, on a national level, and maybe even an international level, that Vegas was more than just casinos and the Strip. And for a lot of residents, a lot of people that live here, they've known that for years, but it's the first time that there's that recognition, and it's because of the Golden Knights and their success last year that that really came to the forefront. And that's really, I think, at the crux of why this city absolutely loves their Golden Knights.
Ryan Wallace is the radio host for the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Ryan, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks for joining us this evening.
All right. Thank you, guys. Anytime.
We'll do it again real soon. Thanks a lot, Ryan. When we come back, we look at the battle for the top spots in the Pacific Division, and we tell you about a late-night trade that just went down. Doesn't involve the Jets. Don't worry. Don't get too excited. You're listening to NHL This Week, one final segment to come on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
I think in a sense it's got to be deflating. You talk about it. 8-1-1 in their last 10. They've actually lost ground on San Jose in that regard because San Jose's 9-1 in their last 10. Only a point up during that stretch on the Vegas Golden Knights, who are 8-2 in their last 10. It's got to be tough being so consistent, playing so consistently well, winning consistently, and not bringing that gap up at the top of the Pacific Division even further. Having said that, though, and talking to Michael Backlund today, the Calgary Flames are happy with the fact that they've managed to move clear of the other teams in the Pacific Division. Now it's just a matter of finding a little bit more room at the top.
It certainly is a logjam atop the Pacific Division in the NHL. The Flames, the Golden Knights, and the Sharks are the clear upper echelon in the Pacific. They'll be doing battle. It seems like it'll be right up until the end of the season. Welcome back to NHL This Week, one final segment on this Wednesday evening. It's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com all week at Rumors. She's been playing to sold-out crowds. Michelle Shaughnessy in town. She's got a show tomorrow night, Thursday night, two shows Friday, two shows Saturday. Get your tickets now to see Michelle Shaughnessy and the entire list of upcoming comedians at RumorsComedyClub.com. The trade I mentioned, like I said, not going to be one that's going to make you pull over and stop your car, but the Anaheim Ducks continue to retool the team or rearrange the deck chairs on the Titanic, as the case may be. They acquired defenseman Michael Delzotto from the Vancouver Canucks in exchange for defenseman Luke Shen and a 2019 seventh-round draft pick. So it's a trade of disappointing veteran defenseman for disappointing veteran defenseman, probably not going to make a big deal for either team. The Canucks have immediately assigned Shen to AHL's Utica Comets, which means that Elias Pettersson is going to be available and back in their lineup. That is the roster move that gives them the space to activate him IR, which is good news for the Canucks as they've been able to sort of tread water without Pettersson in their lineup. And hell, they're right in the thick of things for the final playoff spots in the Western Conference.
You know what's interesting about that trade, Drew, is that both of those defensemen were first-round picks in 2008.
Yes.
And when you're talking about Luke Shen, to me, he's been more disappointing than Michael Delzotto. That was the year Drew Doughty went second overall to the LA Kings, right? So, and Alex Pietrangelo to the Blues, and Zach Bogosian went to the Thrashers, right? So when you're talking about Doughty and Pietrangelo, those are all-star Olympic defensemen, and Shen and Delzotto are not. Now, Delzotto, I think, has resurrected his career quite nicely. Obviously, you know, the Canucks aren't a very good team, and I think they've been more competitive than I thought they were going to be. But when you're talking about the Ducks, we talked about them earlier with Josh Cooper, right?
Mm-hmm.
You traded Andrew Cogliano for Devin Shore. So you save some money, you get a little bit younger. When you're talking about Michael Delzato, he's quicker than Luke Shen. And as you mentioned, Shen's been playing in the American Hockey League, right? Yeah, Shen's been playing with the San Diego Gulls. So
he's making $800,000, Shen is. He's a UFA at season's end. Michael Delzato, sorry for interrupting you there, as he is making $3 million. So they're obviously taking on a little more cap hit. He's also a UFA at season's end, though.
Right. So you're Bob Murray. You're obviously, you know, you're thinking, well, at least I'll get something for Luke Shen here. He doesn't really factor in. I think he's only played 8 games for the Ducks, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Delzato at this point in his career is a better defenseman than Shen. And, you know, Shen had a nice run with the Leafs and the Flyers, but he's been more of a defensive defenseman. Now, again, is this going to change the fortunes of the Ducks by getting Devin Shore and Delzato in the picture here? Well, it can't get any worse, right?
They've lost 12 in a row.
They've lost 12 in a row, so you might as well make a few moves, see what happens here. We talked about, you know, Ryan Kessler. He's going to miss a few games here at least.
Yeah.
Corey Perry's not coming back anytime soon. They're talking, you know, March, maybe.
Yeah, and he might even then, he's a shell of himself.
So, I mean, it's looking like the Ducks better start winning some games here, Drew, or they're going to be out of the playoff picture. But right now, as it stands, they're still in it, so they can still turn it around, but I mean, you got to end this losing streak here.
For what it's worth, Elliot Friedman just tweeting seconds ago that he doesn't think that the Anaheim Ducks are done for tonight, meaning there's likely, according to Elliot, to be another Anaheim Ducks-related trade.
Well, again,
tonight.
Sorry to cut you off here, Drew, but you talked about it earlier, right?
Yeah.
When we talked about the Ducks. I mean, Bob Murray comes out, Shawnee, and he says, I'm not firing Randy Carlyle, right? So if you're not going to fire the coach and your team is struggling, you might as well make some moves. And we know Bob Murray is not afraid to make moves, and he's making a bunch of moves, and you could call them minor, but at least he's trying to do something here.
Like I said, I was being a little facetious saying, you know, rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, but he's not standing pat. He's not doing the easy thing, which is to dismiss the head coach. He's, you know, trying to change the feel for the dressing room, you know, one small move at a time. I'd suggest. Let's take a look at the out-of-town scoreboard. It was a relatively busy night, busy Wednesday night in the NHL. Usually Wednesdays are a little quieter. This one had at least half a dozen games, or 5 games as the case may be. They're off to a shootout in Vancouver. The Oilers and the Canucks, they're doing battle for that final, for the wild card spots in the Western Conference. Both teams are going to get a point. They're off to a shootout to determine who's going to get the bonus point. 2-2 after 65 minutes of play in Vancouver. They're off to a shootout there. In Ottawa, this is a bad loss for the Colorado Avalanche as their struggles continue. There's a team that's been in a complete free fall as of late. We saw Nathan MacKinnon get very upset. Last week with Jared Bednar.
Do your job. And then he fell off the bench.
Then he fell off the bench. The Ottawa Senators beating the Colorado Avalanche at home tonight by a 5-2 margin. The Philadelphia Flyers, they're victorious. Carter Hart in net for the Flyers tonight. They defeat the Boston Bruins by a 4-3 margin.
Isn't it amazing that we're, you know, talking about Philadelphia, Ottawa winning hockey games, and it doesn't matter at all? Like, they're way out of it.
Yeah.
They have no chance at making the playoffs. And, it, you know, it's great for Carter Hart. I think he has 4 wins now.
Something like that.
On the season. Yeah. I mean, you know, great for him. He's the future in net for the Flyers. But, I mean, what are they, 20 points back right now?
It doesn't mean anything. The most interesting part of that is David Backes was a healthy scratch tonight for the Boston Bruins.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
So, and he hasn't been playing well, but that's surprising.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen a lot of good veteran players. Jay Bouwmeester was scratched earlier this year.
If you can't skate anymore and you can't keep up, it's where you quickly lose out on your roster spot. In Calgary, this is a good win for the Buffalo Sabres in overtime. Jack Eichel, a team desperately that needed a win after they had been embarrassed by the Oilers, 7-2, I think it was earlier this week. The Buffalo Sabres, 4-3 victors in Calgary over the Flames tonight in overtime. So that's a good victory for the Sabres.
By the way, Drew, Carter Hart's up to 5 wins.
There you go.
And that's a huge win for the Sabres because
they'd fallen out of the wild card spot.
Well, they really haven't been that good since that 10-game winning streak.
That's right. They've been struggling as of late, so they needed this win to go into a
Jeff place. Skinner got hurt in this game.
I was reading earlier.
I'm not sure if he returned, but he was banged up, took a big hit.
You mean Jeff $Skinner?
Correct, Amundo.
Is that the same guy? Same guy? $Skinner and Skinner are the
same
guy?
That's his middle name.
He's going to get paid.
Of course he's going to get paid.
He's second in the NHL in goals.
The final game on the out-of-town scoreboard tonight in Arizona, the San Jose Sharks drop a 6-3 decision to the Arizona Coyotes. A good win for the Coyotes again, another team that is on the fringes of the they're really on the fringes of the poor Western Conference playoff race, but a good win for the Coyotes, defeating a good San Jose Sharks team by a 6-3 margin.
Yeah, that snapped the Sharks' 7-game winning streak.
Well, there you go. So that's, like I said, a good one for the Coyotes to get a home ice victory in that instance.
Absolutely. And, you know, talking about the Pacific Division, obviously, you know, the Calgary Flames have defeated the Jets, and, you know, they pick up a point but lose to the Sabres tonight. But, you know, that Pacific Division, for me, the Central Division is top-heavy, but I don't think we expected the Pacific Division to be this top-heavy.
I was thinking that exact same
right?
thing
because
earlier.
Because the Ducks are struggling. They've lost 12 in a row. But the Edmonton Oilers are the team, to me, that you expected to push teams like the Sharks and push teams like the Golden Knights. And talking about all these moves that Bob Murray has made with the Ducks, you got to think that we're only days away from Chiarelli pulling the trigger here, because they have to do something here.
God help Oilers fans. I mean, that's what all the chatter is, of course, is that, yeah, you're absolutely right.
But they really do. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Peter Chiarelli didn't do much in the offseason.
Which was an error.
And he really needs to bring in a defenseman. He needs to bring in secondary scoring. He needs to bring in a goaltender. I mean, he needs to bring in a lot here.
They say that Klefbom is close to returning to the Oilers lineup, and that might be the catalyst to start to make a move to maybe that is what they're hoping will propel them back into a playoff spot. That's it for this edition of NHL This Week. A big thank you to all of our guests. Ryan Wallace joined us to cover the Golden Knights, Josh Cooper of The Athletic on the Ducks and the Kings, and Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio on the Predators, in case you missed any of that. It's available on our website, illegalcurve.com. It's on tsn1290.ca, and it's wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, get it sent to your device automatically each and every week. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jersey. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Chris Curry on the board. For Sean Asor, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel.
Birders.
Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck, and thanks for listening to TSN Radio 1290.